the Treasury Star Parade. Produced by William A. Bacher, with Dinah Shore, John Nesbitt, David Brookman, and the Treasury Orchestra, and Vincent Price as our Master of Ceremonies.
Thank you, Larry Elliott. Today we've brought back to the Treasury Star Parade for her third appearance a girl who has won the heart of all America. She's petite and gentle, but when she steps up to sing, she evokes a rhythm and punch which are her own special contribution to the American scene. Miss Dinah Shore, regretting that she didn't know what time it was.
Once I was young, yesterday perhaps, danced with Jim and Paul and kissed some other chap. Once I was young, but never was naive. I thought I had a trick or two up my imaginary sleeve. And now I know I was naive. I didn't know what time it was then I met you. Oh, what a lovely time it was. How sublime it was too. I didn't know what day it was. You held my hand warm like the month of May it was. And I'll say it was grand, grand to be alive, to be mad, to be young, to be yours alone. Grand to see your face, feel your touch, hear your voice, say I'm all your own.
Thank you, Dinah. And now, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. John Nesbitt, whose radio program, The Passing Parade, has chronicled for many years the stories of some of the most interesting personalities in America. Today, he has come to our studio to tell you about a book, a very particular book, and the man who wrote it. The book itself is not significant as a book. It's badly written, erratic, contradictory, and confused. But it became more than a book. It came true. And now, Mr. Ness.
Years ago, an Italian traveler was thrown into a jail cell in Genoa. And to pass the time, he wrote a book. His name was Marco Polo. And his book about China was so exciting that it started a world movement of exploration and led to the discovery of America. A book written in prison. 267 years ago, another man went to prison in London, England. He, too, wrote a book to keep from going mad in the silence of his cell. His name was John Bunyan. The book was Pilgrim's Progress. And after the Bible, it has sold more copies than any other book ever penned by man. A book written in prison. On a beautiful spring morning, just 18 years and 5 months ago, to a little river town in Bavaria, they brought another prisoner, tossed him into a cell, and forgot about him. He, too, decided to write a book. Marco Polo had told how he loved China. Bunyan had told how he loved Christianity. So this man decided to tell how he hated everything. During the soft spring evenings in April and May and June, he would stride around his cell dictating to another prisoner, a thin, gray-faced radical with dirty hair. His name, of course, Adolf Hitler. His book, of course, Mein Kampf. And while we were watching the Washington Baseball Club win the series, or nominating Calvin Coolidge for president and winning the 1924 Olympics, or loaning Germany a couple of $100 million to help it back on its feet, or watching Doug Fairbanks' latest picture called The Thief of Baghdad, the thin man in his jail cell was writing the book. The thin man wrote, "First, Germany must conquer Europe, for no nation on earth holds a square yard of territory by any right derived from heaven. Strength alone constitutes the right to possess." "Might is right," wrote the thin man. But he was just a broken-down, penny-ante rabble-rouser in a jail. And it didn't concern us, did it? While we were working up the Dawes peace plan that year, the thin man wrote, "Labor unions are to be abolished. Strikes are to be forbidden. No one is to be free to find work where he pleases. Wages will be frozen. Workmen forbidden to look for or even accept better jobs." Well, it didn't concern us, did it? The following year, while we were busy with the monkey trial of Tennessee, the thin man wrote, "When we talk of new lands in Europe, we are bound to think first of Russia. The immense empire is ripe for collapse." Well, it didn't concern us, did it? The next year, 1926, the American stock market hit a new high, and a lot of us got rich enough to go abroad to play in Europe and drink unbootlegged liquor. A few Americans read the book then, and they saw that it had something in it for us after all. You can read that line today. It's terse, concise, complete. It's just one sentence that appeared in the first edition. "Democracy in the West today is a monstrosity of filth." In the years that followed, the miracle happened. The one chance in 10 million that would make his wild, badly written, clumsily thought-out book succeed actually turned up, and it became the Bible of the Nazi world, and its author became its god. Everything a Nazi official said officially became part of the book, for censorship was an iron wall. What Hitler wanted us to hear, we heard, and nothing else. We listened to it, we read the book, but it didn't seem to make sense. It didn't make sense when Hitler said, quote, "I shall maneuver France out of her Maginot line without losing a single soldier. How to do it is my secret." Then, paragraph by paragraph, line by line, Adolf Hitler made his book come true. He attacked France exactly as he said, pulled the wool over England's eyes exactly as he said, and on schedule tore apart the old world. But he was talking about them. He was destroying them and not us, wasn't he? And then suddenly he was talking about destroying us. And from a dozen official documents can be drawn the plan for America. From the Ministry of Agriculture comes this plan, Berlin, May 1st, 1940. "A new aristocracy of German masters, the Herrenvolk, will be created. This aristocracy will have slaves assigned to it. Please do not interpret the word slaves as a parable. Actually, we have in mind a modern form of medieval slavery, which we must introduce because we urgently need it in order to fulfill our great tasks." It concerns us, doesn't it? "Higher education will in the future be reserved only for the German population." Concerns us, doesn't it? Adolf Hitler, interview with Hermann Rauschning, 1933, quote, "Do you really believe the masses will ever be Christian again? Nonsense. I promise you I can destroy the church in a few years." Adolf Hitler, interview, 1933. "Americans behaved like clumsy boys. The American is no soldier. The inferiority and decadence of this allegedly new world is evident in its military inefficiency." Concerns us, doesn't it? "Our superior products will be sold at very low prices throughout the world and will cause the United States to have not 7 million, but 30 million, 40 million unemployed. Then there is the matter of race. These are the words of Hitler's head of the Office of Racial Plan, Dr. Walther Gross. Our policy is to arrest the fertility of the Poles, Czechs, Serbs, Russians, and other Slavic peoples. Every increase through births among these parasitic peoples would be contrary to the general interests. We have therefore adopted radical measures to limit their births to a minimum. German soldiers will be free to abuse Slav women, but these women are not allowed to bear children. An exception is hereby made for girls in some districts of Poland, as in the Tatras mountain region, where they have been put into breeding camps at Heleniov near Lutz. And that is not about us, our women, or our families, because we have not been conquered. But there is a final document that again is the official released by the censor Nazi View. We are mentioned in it. I quote Dr. Richard Daré, one of Hitler's ministers. At present, the United States is so demoralized and corrupted that, like France, it need not be taken into consideration as a military adversary. All the added chapters of a book begun in the cell of a jail, the one that we didn't think concerned us. Even the contemptuous, boastful sentence, the United States is so demoralized and corrupted that it need not be taken into consideration as a military adversary. It doesn't apply to us. It doesn't apply to you, does it? Unless you're the man who bought the bootleg tires. Unless you're the man with the scrap metal rusting in your garage because it was too much trouble to get it to the salvage place. Unless you are the man who doesn't buy bonds, because in a democracy, no one makes you buy bonds. This is the man Hitler sincerely believes you are. If he were right, the last chapter of Mein Kampf will be written in Berlin and not in Washington or London. But since you are not that man, this book of theirs, the most tragic book known to all the history of the human heart, the final chapter will be written by us. For Adolf Hitler, when he dreamed it all up that summer of 1924, proud to be writing his book in the cell of a jail, proud to be among those who changed history from behind barred windows, quite overlooked one of the men who also grew famous for such a prison task. He overlooked the fact that 110 years before he entered that jail in Bavaria to write Mein Kampf, an American in a cell likewise did some writing. In Fort McHenry was imprisoned Francis Scott Key, and the last four lines of his contribution to literature from a prison cell goes, "And conquer we must when our cause it is just, and this be our motto, in God is our trust, and the star-spangled banner in triumph shall wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave."
Thank you, John Nesbitt. We know now what for many years we did not understand, that the mad little house painter, pacing up and down his cell, dictating his book, wanted more than anything else to destroy this democracy, this freedom, which to Americans is the most precious heritage in the world. But he made one mistake. He did not know the spirit and the temper of the American people. We will continue to fight and to work and to save until we win. You can do your part. Invest at least 10% of your total incomes in United States war-saving bonds and stamps. Yes, let's make it everybody 10% by New Year, 10% every week, every payday. Remember, every dollar you invest in war savings bonds, you are investing in the future security of America. This is your country. Keep it yours.